Welcome to Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith. Join Jaguars General Manager Gene Smith and your host Cole Pepper as they break down the last Jaguars game and look at the next time the Jaguars take the field. We'll also take a dip inside the Gene Pool to see what makes a player stand out at his position. Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith is brought to you by Baptist Health, Ticket Exchange, Wells Fargo, Sonny's Barbecue, your local Jacksonville Teal Deals merchants, and by Everbank. Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith begins right now.
And we welcome you in here on a Halloween evening. Some of the kids may be out trick-or-treating right now. If they're in my neighborhood, they're not going to get any candy because I'm right here on the radio with the general manager, Gene Smith, following the Jaguars' 24-14 loss to the Texans yesterday in what was certainly a pivotal game in the season and tough way to go into the bye week. You never want to lose going into the bye week.
No question. Thought that we'd be able to stack a win. It was a big win, obviously, on Monday night against the Ravens, and we weren't able to get a road win in our division the way we would have liked to have.
And we'll break down some of the things that went wrong, some of the things that went right as well, and talk about the Jaguars as they get ready for a bye week. And just as a point of information, the bye week has changed based on the collective bargaining agreement. You now have really a five-day off kind of situation. You have 4 days in a row off, and then next week, the mandatory day off that they always have. So you're talking about in the course of 6-7 days, you're going to take 5 days off, and that means that the players, you can't have more than, is it one or two players at a time in the complex in a supervised capacity? So Jack was trying to describe this today at his press conference. Basically, it's not quite a mini lockout, but it's not that far off. You can't have practice. You can have film study with one guy at a time, kind of thing. But you're not supposed to have a ball out there on the field with these guys. And one of the things I was wondering, and certainly we'll take your calls or your comments on Facebook.com/JacksonvilleJaguars as well as on Twitter. You can tweet to me at Cole Pepper. Veteran players, if they wanted to get a group together as they did during the lockout, that'd be something that would be allowed, yeah?
It would be. I mean, they could go to a local high school or they could go somewhere where they could get players together and do what they want to do, but certainly no involvement on our part at all.
And so, of course, part of a bye week always is resting up and healing up, and that's a big part of this. Although, by and large, pretty healthy group right now with the guys who are playing. There have been a number of players who have been placed on IR, but got a couple, and we'll talk about those a little bit later on in the injury report, but there have been a number of years where you've gone into the bye week with guys just, you know, dragging themselves to the bye week to try to get a week of rest. That's really not the case right now.
It's not. We have a relatively healthy roster, and we really haven't had any major injuries to a frontline starter. Now, we had some key role players, certainly, that are no longer with us, but will be next year. But really, I'm looking at the roster and saying as we come out of the bye, we'll have everyone ready to go from a health standpoint.
Which will be a very positive thing for sure. All right, we'll get to a lot of the issues, but I did want to talk about some of the positives. I thought one of the big positives in the game yesterday was after the 12-play drive that Houston marched right down the field on the opening drive. After that, the defense, I thought, was very good. Just a quick change, and after that it was 4 plays in punt, 3 plays punt, 3 plays punt, fumble, and defense, not quite as dominating front to back as they were against Baltimore, but facing a much better defense and doing it on the road, still had another good game.
They really did. The one thing I'll say about Houston's offense, they executed at a high level on that first drive, and sometimes a team will put in a few new wrinkles for a new opponent. And obviously, within your division, you know each other very, very well. So any time that you can add something new, it's something that should work in your favor, and it did on that opening drive. And I think the other thing, for our defense, playing in a environment like that with the crowd noise and the intensity of this being a divisional game, I think you got to settle down and you got to adjust to what they're doing. And once you're able to, after that first drive, you hope it's not a score, but if it is, you hope you settle down and you play your type of football.
Yeah, Jacoby Jones really was a factor, especially early in the game, on a day when Andre Johnson wasn't playing. And we've seen Jones as a return guy in the past, but looks like he's developing as another weapon for Matt Schaub.
He really is. The one thing I thought they did a good job of is off their run game is their play-action pass. Mm-hmm. They were sneaking in receivers behind our linebackers and in front of our safeties, which I thought, you know, was a good thought on their part coming into our game because our linebackers are very active against the run.
And when you have the defending NFL rushing champ and a guy who's had a good year when he's been in there, in Arian Foster. And Foster had 112 yards, but he only averaged 3.4. And some folks will look right at the 112 and say, oh, boy, a bad day by the Jaguars defense. But, boy, when you hold – he only had one run, I think, of over 10 yards and never really was a factor in terms of breaking a big one, which he's known to do from time to time. Well, averaging 3.4, you happy with that against a top runner like Foster and a very good offensive line?
Well, obviously – when you're not generating a lot of points on offense, you're not forcing the opponent to do anything other than their bread and butter. And so they were able to stay with their right arm, and that is running the football. And, you know, they were getting yards and controlling the clock, and then really their play action, again, is very effective off their run game. And I thought for the most part with the situations that they were put in terms of field position and then certainly being out on the field for the period of time that they were, that they hung in there.
And made a couple of plays, the defense, talking about forcing a couple of fumbles. The first on a sack by Clint Session, who's really been a very active and productive player lately as he's been utilized more in some pass rush and some blitz situations by Mel Tucker. He forced the fumble. Roth picked it up. Did his best LeBron James no-look behind-the-back pass to Terrence Knighton, who then got it to Session. And we'll play that highlight for you here in just a little bit. Jack Del Rio saying today that that's something that they practice, although the thought was maybe not necessarily to lateral it to pot roast, but to find a fast guy out there who could maybe take it in. And I think he mentioned that if it was a Dwight Lowry who was right there, if he would have gotten it to Lowry, Session could have blocked for him and it might have been a touchdown.
Yeah, it was a great play on his part. He does a good job of timing up his blitzes. And he actually got up off the ground from right. The running back cutting him. He hit Matt Schaub. The ball came out. It was a tremendous play. And then he gets involved into the pitch where he almost ran it into the end zone. But he had an outstanding football game throughout the time he was on the field.
And then the other big play was Dewan Landry forcing the fumble on Ben Tate. Really at a key time in the ball game, Arian Foster had scored on a touchdown after an interception, and then the Jaguars offense went three plays and out, and it was 21-7 at that point. If Houston had gotten anything else, could have really taken the air out of the sails. And Landry able to force the fumble, Dwight Lowry recovers, and the Jaguars able to turn that into a touchdown drive and cut it to within seven. So that was a big play at that time.
It was, and the nice thing about both of the turnovers that we forced on defense, they gave our offense the ball in a short field. And so I thought that was very good. The other opportunity we had was when Dwight had a chance, when the tight end Dressen had an opportunity to catch the ball, which he did in the end zone for a touchdown. He was playing the interception, and he just mistimed his jump. And he said, based on seeing Tyson shoot through the line and creating a little bit of pressure on Matt Schaub, the ball came off higher than what he anticipated. Regardless, it ended up being a touchdown. It was a play that we didn't make, and we could have gotten the ball back and not allowed him to have any points in that drive.
Great example of a game of inches, right? I mean, if he waits one split second longer before he elevates, he either bats it down or gets to it. You never know. I mean, it could have been either one of those things. So some of the positives that happened. Now we'll put some other spins on some of the things. We'll talk about some of the issues that came up, some of the problems that are occurring. And at the bye week, we'll see about what can be addressed and what can happen as far as that. We'll also take your tweets at Cole Pepper. You can also leave your comments at facebook.com/Jacksonville Jaguars. Best ones will be read on the air. When we come back, we'll have the injury update as well. We will announce the Scout's Eye Unsung Player. If you know who the Scout's Eye Unsung Player is, this is the guy who didn't necessarily make the big highlight play, but he did enough to catch the Scout's Eye, made some key plays, and played well. And if you get it right, you will win an autographed football, official NFL game football, autographed by the general manager, and this week's Scout's Eye unsung player. Become part of the Jaguars Advantage, the new Jaguars fan loyalty program with Jaguars Advantage. Season ticket owners can earn up to 15% cash back at hundreds of their favorite online retailers. For more information, go to jaguarsadvantage.com. Back with more Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith right after this timeout here on Jaguars Radio.
Now Sims-Walker goes and lines up on the right side. Jones and Jones-Drew in the eye. Texan snap. Play action. Gabbert turns and throws. He's got a man! Touchdown, Jacksonville! Jason Hill's in the end zone for his third touchdown of the season. And the Jaguars are within an extra point of tying it up.
And another one of the big plays from yesterday's Jaguars loss. Jason Hill is starting to get in a little bit of a groove in terms of catching touchdowns. Got one yesterday from Blaine Gabbert. As the Jaguars fall at this 2-6 of the bye week. This injury update now brought to you by Baptist Health, Jacksonville's Circle of Care. And Gabbert's ribs certainly going to be something we'll keep an eye on throughout the course of the bye week and into next week. Won't get any official injury updates. You don't need to give those out during the bye week. But Gabbert had the ribs, came back in, looked like they had put a pad or a little flak jacket of some kind on there to give him some protection. And not sure how much of an impact that made on his throwing at all, but Evan Britton's back is another one we'll be keeping a close eye on because you would figure usually time would help that. And as a guy who's had some back issues and just wrenched my back earlier today, I know time and rest usually is a positive thing, so we'll see how Evan can come back. Fans, just text BBQ to 72239. That's 72239. Enter for a chance to win the Sunday's Game Ball Delivery Contest. You could hand the game ball to the ref at the start of the next Jaguars home game. Maybe not a good thing if picking up a 16-pound dachshund is throwing out my back, huh? But that's how I did it. So I'm playing hurt today. And we're getting ready here for more here at Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith. Again, if you have a Scout's Eye pick, you can tweet that to me at Cole Pepper. I will break my arm, pat myself on the back, and say that I did nail it first time out tonight. So we'll see if anybody else gets that one. Have some tweets here. Let's go to Kyle, who has a tweet saying, asking if Will Rackley has played up to the expectations that you had for him when he was drafted.
The last two games he has. Really proud of him because he struggled early. After the preseason, he had a solid performance. Then he started the regular season. He had multiple things going on. On both hands, he had an ankle he tried to play through. He nicked his knee up. Then he re-injured his ankle in the game yesterday, taped it up, went back in. But he'll be fine. But I'm very proud of him and the fact that he has played through some things as a young player at a difficult position. And the last two games in particular started to look like what he did in the preseason. So I think he's getting back to who he's capable of being long term.
Was health the biggest issue with him as he was struggling early in the season?
It was. He had problems with both hands, and they're finally getting healthy. And when you're an offensive lineman and you got to punch, you got to have healthy hands. And I feel like he's finally getting back into the groove.
Yeah, I got one on Facebook for you, Gene. By the way, these tweets and Facebook questions brought to you by our good friends at CopyFax. Gene Robb says, any reason we're not pursuing any of the current free agent wide receivers out there, especially since we can sign them to one-year prorated league minimum salaries?
Well, in some cases you can do that. Certainly the guys who are out there, there's reasons why they are still out there. And we feel like what we have to get more production out of by continuing to work with them. There's a lot of details of that position group, and obviously the tight ends and running back. We just got to get more production out of catching the ball when we get open. And as we do that and create consistent timing, hopefully that'll come through this bye week time where we can get a little bit more practice in before our next game. Hopefully the last eight regular season games will be a whole lot better than the first eight.
You know, it's interesting, too. The wide receivers getting a lot of attention today as well. Ron tweeting, can the receivers do something to get better separation?
Yes, they can by running better routes. I think we got to be better at the top end of our routes because it's not always about having speed. It's about having separation quickness at the top end. And if you can get in and out of your routes, you don't have to be exceptionally fast. You just have to have an explosive first step, and you got to know how to set up a defensive back. And get out of the route, snap your head around, and catch the ball.
Yes, some guys just naturally have that quick explosion. They go 0 to 60 very quickly, so to speak. But it seems like the guys who set up routes the best have always, you know, you see a lot of times guys coming in who are sons of coaches and that sort of thing, guys who have really worked on their craft. And, of course, Keenan McCardell is probably the one that every Jaguars fan thinks about and talking about setting up a route. There's a craft to that. There's an art to it.
Cole, the guy you just mentioned is who I was going to mention. I think as a Jaguar fan, you know that Keenan was never an elite speed receiver, but he always had a knack for getting open. He was a crafty receiver, and I'm so happy he's now a receiver coach because he'll have so much to give back to young players. And that's what we have to get better at as a whole group. The number one thing you have to do, though, is catch the ball. So you can be big, you can be fast, you can be strong, you can be tough. When you get open, you got to catch the ball.
Yeah. Or even if you're not open and you have a chance at it, you can certainly make it. You look at some of the guys who are making the big differences, and we bring up Calvin Johnson all the time. He's the best receiver in the game right now. Even when he's covered, he's finding a way to make a play on the ball. When he gets his hands on it, it usually stays there.
That's correct. I mean, you have to, at some points, Cole, be able to make covered catches. I mean, there are some good corners in the NFL. And if you can't win fast, you got to win big. And sometimes it's knowing how to use your body. And so there's a lot of things that we can get better at within that position group.
Adam tweets, do you expect that the wide receiver will be a position you'll address this offseason?
I would expect that would be the case. Certainly we're lacking an elite number one wide receiver. And, that's one of the areas that you may have a greater chance to do in the draft. As you go through the draft process at this point in time, we don't know what positions will be strong throughout the draft, especially at the top end. But receiver is usually a position that you can get on most years over some of the other positions.
All right, time now for our Scout's Eye Unsung Player of the Week. And this, again, the guy who didn't necessarily make the highlight play but made the plays and played the way you'd like to see him play. So who is the Scout's Eye Unsung Player this week?
C.J. Mosley. C.J. had three tackles. He had a quarterback hurry. He had a quarterback sack. He had a tackle for a loss. He came in as a rotation defensive tackle, and he was disruptive. For the snaps that he played, he was as productive as any defensive lineman we've had in there yesterday. And he's really been good the last few weeks in practice, and even the spot play that he's had in live games. It's just, I think as the season goes on, he's earned the right to get more opportunities in the games.
He's a guy who has certainly progressed since he came in here. Where'd you find him initially?
Well, we tried to get him initially when he was a UFA. He ended up going to Cleveland because he was a UFA with the Jets, and we ended up getting him when he was cut loose up in Cleveland. I don't want to say he regretted not coming here in the first place. He's happy to be here now, and we're happy to certainly have him. But he's trimmed down, got himself in probably as good a playing shape as he's been since he's been in the NFL, and he's really meshed well with our position group. And he's a one technique. You know, he plays behind Terrence, but he's shown a little bit more quickness than when he first got here to get on the edge of the block and create some pass rush.
Yeah, and looks like a guy who's developing. You talk about trying to develop some of those guys. I think Joe Collins did a nice job with C.J. Mosley, who was our Scout's Eye Unsung Player of the Week this week. We actually have a couple folks who picked that out, not just me. So good job by those who are doing it, and we'll pull the names out of the hat to choose the best. Choose the winner of the Scout's Eye Unsung Player autograph ball. Back with more Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith right after this timeout. News at the bottom of the hour right here on Jaguars Radio.
And back to pass. Job is under pressure. It's hit! The ball's free on the field. Matt Roth has got it. And he dumps it off. Podros has got it. Podros throws it out. And there goes Session inside the 10.
How about that? One of the big defensive plays for the Jaguars in yesterday's game against the Houston Texans. A reminder that Tuesday, November the 8th, that is a week from tomorrow, J.D. Vyrider invites you to their dealership at 8864 Atlantic Boulevard to have cookies with the Jaguars rookies. They'll be there signing autographs and sharing cookies with you from noon until 2. Welcome back, Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith. And as we do, after the bottom of the hour, each and every week, it's time for us to dive into the gene pool and examine the DNA of a position. And today, we're talking about a position that some would say is unglamorous, and that is the guard position. Guards, average size from my deep research, 6'3", 300, running a 5'1'7 in the 40. What do you have, Gene?
Well, coming out of college a year ago at the Combine, 6'04", 1'3", 15", and 5'3", 9". Starters in the NFL a year ago, 6'04", 0'3", 12", 5'2", 2". So really, offensive linemen, like all other positions, they really come in all different shapes and sizes. The key thing here is, are they knee benders? We're looking for knee benders, guys who can play the game on their feet.
Are guards different now than they were 15, 20 years ago? Do you have a different expectation about what you want out of them based on maybe less trapping or different styles of blocking in the run game and the pass game?
Well, I think with more zone blocking today, there are some teams that aren't all caught up in a guard's ability to pull because they're just covering up defensive linemen. And Houston employed what's called the reach and run, kind of a true inside-outside zone blocking run scheme. And
similar to the Denver way of doing things.
No question. Yeah. And they don't pull their guards a lot unless it's a screen, something like that. We pull our guards a little bit more, especially the left guard. So the left guard is probably, for teams that do pull their guards, the third most athletic guy, because you have the left tackle, then the center, then usually the left guard.
So the other thing I've noted through the years is if you would see a guy in an empty room from way off, and just the proportion of their body is different if he's a tackle versus a guard usually. Usually guards tend to be a little lower center of gravity guys, whereas tackles usually are longer-legged guys. That's not always the case. Leon Searcy, for instance, was a guy who was, kind of looked like a guard but was a terrific tackle. Am I generalizing too much, or is that the case?
No, that's the case. And you get squat bodies inside. Guys, again, that can bend because you got defensive tackles that are in that 6'2", 6'3", 6'4", range, and you got to be able to play with leverage because you got some very explosive players that you line up against. I would say this to guards, you like to have their arms at least 34 inches long. Tackles, it's usually 34. And then centers, you can get away with short arms over any other offensive line position. You just got to be very quick with your hands. But, you know, the left guard and the right guard are two different type guys. The right guard's more of a power run guy and a guy who has to be able to really anchor versus a strong defensive tackle so that a right-handed quarterback can step up in the pocket and throw. And the left guard, again, I don't want to say he's a finesse player, but he's got to be able to pull and adjust, and he has a lot of combo blocks with the center where the right guard doesn't have as much of that.
All right, well, let's use that in terms of analyzing and looking at what the Jaguars do. Uche Nwaneri has played both left and right guard in his time. Pretty athletic guy for a guy of his size. And he's playing right guard now, which you're talking about being more stout. And you've got Will Rackley, the rookie, playing left guard, guy who was a tackle in college. So how does that translate into what you're asking him to do?
Well, Uche is unique because he can play all three positions inside. You know, he's even played center. And so he coming out of college, was 6'3", 326, and he's got 34-inch arms and 10-inch hands. So he's got the arm length of a tackle, and he's got the movement of a center, or certainly left guard, playing the right guard spot. And then Will Rackley was a left tackle in college that converted, as you said, to left guard, and he can actually play center. He can actually play right guard, too, because he played that some in training camp. So if you get a guard who has the versatility to play center, now you got somebody that really has value for your football team.
All right, what are some of the non-measurables you look for in guards? Is there a mindset or a particular approach, that sort of thing that you want out of a guy? Do you want a guy who maybe knows how to push the edge of the rules, anything like that?
Well, I like that mindset. I think you want guys that have that gritty toughness because they're going to match up with a guy on the other side of the line of scrimmage with a aggressive attitude. So some of the best guards are guys who played defensive line in high school or in college. And again, you got to have a smart guy because there's a lot of things that are going on up front, pre-snap guys moving, blitzes, stunts, and they got to be aware to react to them. So intelligence is important on the offensive line.
All right, so we've gotten to the point in the gene pool where you ask the question, who is best, whether it's best you've seen, best in the league right now, best ever? Who came to your mind in the who is best?
Well, the two best are on the same team. New Orleans, who we played earlier in the year, Jari Evans out of Bloomsburg College, and then Carl Nix out of Nebraska. They're both 6'4 plus, and they're both in the 330 to 350 range.
You kind of grinned a little bit there. Maybe what's on paper might not be what's on the scale, huh?
That's correct. And then I would say most recently, names that people would know of are the head coach and the offensive line coach for the Tennessee Titans, two Pro Football Hall of Fame offensive linemen. Mike Munchak was 6'3", 281, and Bruce Matthews was 6'6", 289, and he played everywhere in the offensive line. But I had an opportunity this past Saturday to see his son Jake play right tackle for Texas A&M. It was a tremendous football game. Missouri came back to win it in overtime. But those two guys were exceptional guys, very durable, and now in our division.
Yeah, and as coaches. So it seems like a lot of former offensive linemen wind up making pretty good coaches.
They do.
Something about the knowing the toughness, but also understanding some of the schemes, maybe.
No question. And I think to be a good offensive line coach, you got to be a good teacher. Because next to quarterback, I've said this before, it's a one position that's got to be taught the most technique and footwork.
And one of the last thought here on guard, and this goes with all offensive linemen, something I remember Tom Coughlin saying years and years ago, is that when you look for a young player at that position to improve, it's going to be a slow, steady growth. You're not going to have a guy who suddenly, like the light just turns on. That's not the way it works with that position. Other positions, you can have that. Offensive line, guard, not necessarily.
That's correct. And Tony Boselli was the exception. You know, he was the best to ever play here, one of the best to ever play in the NFL. They don't come in as ready-made as Tony Boselli, as a run blocker, as a pass blocker. You know, a lot of these guys, because of the physical nature of the position, the matchups that you have as a young player, you really got to be able to handle the physical rigors. And so it does take time, Cole, no question.
All right, that is a look into the gene pool as we took a look at the guards this week. All right, time to get back to some Facebook and Twitter questions as well. Here's one from Jason who says, "Are there speaking of the offensive line, are there any tryouts planned for the O-line? Are you looking to bolster the offensive line at this point going forward?"
Well, we have a bye week workout every year, and I'll bring in a number of different players at different positions. An offensive line is one of them, so we're always looking certainly to add a player. And typically at this point of the year, it may be on the practice squad, a guy that may have some developmental upside. We like to call, you know, our practice squad developmental squad. We hope that the coaches will get a return on their time investment in the player.
And so does the bye week offer you something different than you can during a regular week when you're trying to get ready for a game and so forth? Obviously you have more time, but does that do something different from a scouting standpoint?
Not really. We're just typically able to bring in more players because you do have more time. And sometimes during the season, the priority is if you have an injury in a game and you got to get somebody in a timely manner, there's some things with practice and all that you just got to work at a different pace, whereas this is a little bit more of pure scouting at a lot of players and getting updated information and also medical information.
All right. We'll have some more Facebook and Twitter questions coming up here in just a bit with the general manager. But if you're a parent or guardian of a girl aged 6 to 17 years of age, stop by your local Bell store, register your child to become a member of the Junior Roar performing at halftime during the Jags-Bucks game December 11th. Registration now through November 6th. For official rules, visit your nearby Bell store. Back with more Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith right after this timeout here on Jaguars Radio.
Tight end right, receivers go left. Gabbert moves, bring a man in motion. That's Mike Thomas. Here's the handoff. Jones-Drew cuts it back, and he's going to go to the end zone. Maurice Jones-Drew, touchdown, Jacksonville.
Another one of the highlights from yesterday's Jaguars loss to the Houston Texans. Welcome back. Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith continues. Season ticket holders get paid at the pump when you buy 10 gallons or more of Gate gasoline. Show your Jaguars rewards card and receipt to the cashier for your coupon worth $2 in JagBucks. Redeemable for $2 in JagBucks. Redeemable for game day concessions and merchandise. Couple more minutes here with the general manager. Hope you guys are ready to have a happy and safe Halloween. Facebook.com/Jacksonville Jaguars, and you can tweet your questions to me at Cole Pepper if you want to tweet in a question. Here's one from Kevin. Gene, can pocket presence and footwork for a quarterback being improved with coaching?
It can be. The one thing about pocket presence for a quarterback, it's the ability to feel pressure without seeing it, because you want to keep your eyes down the field. I think what Blaine has to improve upon is when he feels it and he slides, he's got to reset his feet to throw with accuracy. I think one of the things that he's gotten away from since training camp, and it happens when you get into the flow of live games and things start to happen a little bit more in an abstract way up front, is even though you slide or you move in the pocket, you have to reset your feet, because your footwork is the foundation to accuracy. And certainly it gives you the opportunity to throw with greater balance. So again, when you can do that, you'll be much more efficient throwing the football.
Is he seeing things and experiencing some things in the pocket that he did not experience in college because of the offense they ran at Missouri?
That's a good question, Cole. I would say in the limited play time he had under the center in college, there are some things that are different, especially in the quick game, and then also some of your play action things. So there is a learning curve there. But I think over the course of time, as he evolves as a quarterback and things function better around him, you'll continue to see growth. And we got to understand, too, in regards to him, I mean, he's played against five of the top 10 defenses thus far in the NFL. So he's had a good opportunity to experience some of the NFL's best.
And one of the things I would just point out as well, and we got a lot of people who are on Blaine's case this week, but here's the kid, just turned 22. Was a young quarterback starting in the Big 12, came out of Missouri, so we knew there was going to be a system, an adjustment from more of a spread, shotgun, passing, quick, get it out quick kind of system to the NFL system. And certainly folks, and I think a lot of fans are frustrated and looking, they're waiting for Peyton Manning or Tom Brady to show up, and not remembering or thinking that Peyton Manning and Tom Brady were not Peyton Manning and Tom Brady as rookies.
No, I think you'll see for a quarterback their second year, if they get an opportunity to play, that they really take a big step. You know, Peyton was 3-13 his first year, threw more interceptions than touchdowns. Certainly had some struggles, but obviously, he's had a good history in the NFL, and then Tom got his shot in his second season when Bledsoe went down, and he took advantage of it. But I would say this, we're not catching the ball as well as we should be. When you go through the last six games, we've dropped 20 balls. Mm-hmm. Nine of them would have been first downs. Mm-hmm. Three were potential touchdown. So we have to function better as an entire offense. It does start with the quarterback, but there's a lot of pieces to execution, and it's a team sport. It's never one player. It's never only one play between winning and losing. It's everybody working together and doing their part.
Let's take a look at the AFC South as it stands right now at the Jaguars bye week. Texans now 5-3 after beating the Jaguars 24-14 yesterday. Titans at 4-3 after beating a winless Indy 27-10. Jaguars at 2-6. Colts at 0-8. And the Jaguars and Colts will play, of course, first game after the bye week. The Packers are the league's only undefeated team. Miami and Indianapolis, the only winless teams. Miami had a shot at things yesterday, couldn't pull it out. And certainly, I think a surprise to me, I don't know how surprised you were, that St. Louis was able to beat New Orleans for their first victory of the year. New Orleans was coming off that destruction, the 62-7 game over Indy, and St. Louis came out with Bradford on the sideline and got it done.
It's one thing about the NFL, I'm never shocked. You know, any given Sunday, when they say that, that's the truth. That's an incredible win, really, for the Rams.
It really was, and Steven Jackson had a big game, as usually does when they win. He got the job done on the ground and making some big plays. All right, usually at this point we talk about the key matchup in the upcoming Jaguars game. We're going to hold off for a week to look at the Indianapolis game since the bye week is here. But I wonder, what are you going to be watching and watching for this weekend?
Well, a lot of college film. We just started to get games in. So we'll have a minimum of 300 games, and then they'll be coming in at a heavy rate the rest of the college season. So there's a lot of film evaluation that will take place. And this day and age, it's portable because of the digital media that is available. It's amazing. You can do work anywhere at any time, including on an airplane. Mm-hmm. And so that's a real plus. And then what I try to do is to fit in, if it's doable, a college visit or two, or certainly multiple games. There's a lot of things I do from a college end at this time of the year.
All right. How many college games have you seen so far with your own eyes this year?
Well, I typically try to pick up at least one when we play on the road. Like last weekend, it was a tremendous football game, and I got a chance to see a number of players. So for me, that's the enjoyment in what I do, really, to be able to study players and try to project them to a level they'd never performed at.
All right. The bye week here as well, as far as the entire team, not just obviously the scouting department, things are going to be a little different this year. Mandatory 4 days away. What do you think can be accomplished in a bye week in the modern age now with the way it's set up?
Well, it's actually 5 days. They get an opportunity, I think, to get away and to recover. What people don't understand is, in the NFL, the season is twice as long. The players are certainly bigger and faster, so the collisions are greater. And then as a player gets older, their bodies don't recover as quick. So I feel like, this extended period of time is something that'll be put to good use, I'm confident, by our players. And it's the same for everybody in the league. Hopefully they'll utilize the time wisely.
All right, Gene, we appreciate it. Thanks a lot. Have a happy Halloween with the girls. A little trick-or-treating perhaps still to come. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, Cole, and thank you, Joe, and thank you to all the Jaguar fans.
All right, that will do it for Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith. A reminder that tomorrow night at 6, the Jack Del Rio Show, Brian Sexton has the head coach. And then on Wednesday, Brian returns along with Jeff Loggeman and John Osher. 2 hours of Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna. 6 until 8 on Wednesday night. Jaguars are off this weekend. Enjoy the time off. Maybe catch some other NFL games. And then the Jaguars will be back on the field taking on the winless Indianapolis Colts a week from Sunday. And of course, we'll have that game for you right here as well. Have a happy and safe Halloween, everybody. And we'll look forward to talking to you next week. For the general manager, Gene Smith, and for Joe Fortunato, Cole Pepper saying thanks for listening to Jaguars Monday, and good night from Jaguar Central.